Now, Joyce once said that if Dublin disappeared overnight, that you could piece it together from his book, Ulysses. Do you think that's fair? Because that's a big question that you pose.
It's an exaggeration. It's an exaggeration for effect. Joyce was able to draw on his own experience of a city in the way that we all do. None of us know a city completely. We know parts of the city based on the way that we use it and based on the places that we go to see and that we go through. So Joyce is exactly the same. Now, he's a great observer and he's able to put the thing together wonderfully well, but it's only a partial picture. He wasn't great about the life of the poor, because that wasn't part and parcel of his experience. His was the world of the respectable ne'er-do-well, you know, the lower middle classes, the people who have got a certain status but no money. Equally so, then, he's out of place in terms of the grand houses out in Pembroke, the ladies who will go shopping in Switzer's or in Brown Thomas in their carriages and be escorted to the carriage by a liveried footman. So it's too much to expect that he could do that. What he does, though, he does brilliantly.
Now, Anne, before we get on to your own article on Parnell, can I ask you about some of the other chapters in this book? There is a terrific chapter on culture and how Joyce has impacted on other writers and the rewriting of books like Dubliners and Ulysses. It's by Geraldine Meaney. Can you tell me about it?
Geraldine argues in her essay that Irish culture now does interact very visibly with Joyce. It's often been presumed that Irish writers simply have to veer away from Joyce. He's this monumental author, certainly revered, a kind of icon and an example, but that it's too difficult to follow in his footsteps. He is inimitable. Also, he's a modernist writer, and in some ways the modernist experiment comes to an end with Joyce, and Joyce in a way abandons every form that he creates. Every one of his texts is different. So it makes it all the more difficult for Irish writers in some ways to connect up with him. And the generations immediately after Joyce felt more combative about him, particularly the mid-20th century Irish writers like O'Fuaylon and O'Connor. But I think the current generation of authors and filmmakers in Ireland are much more comfortable with Joyce. He's simply really become part of our landscape now. And so you can find echoes of Joyce in, say, Paul Murray's Skippy Dies. Anne Enright's The Gathering is in some ways a kind of portrait of the artist in another form. Irish women writers in particular, I think, have always interacted anyway very positively with Joyce. Elizabeth Bonin and Edna O'Brien have done so. But it's certainly true of contemporary Irish writers. And the revival in the short story in Ireland, Kevin Barry and other new authors who are coming to the fore, like Colin Barrett, for instance, also can be connected up with Joyce. All these writers, like Patrick McKay before them, are discovering these small, explosive mini worlds that need to be voiced, that need a new kind of style and a new kind of energy. And all of this is definitely very Joycean.
And what's interesting there, it's not just Irish writers. You have Angela Carter, the British writer. You've got the South African writer Coetzee's engagement and rewriting of Joyce's text also. So he's broad appeal, hasn't he?
Yes, and it goes much wider than that again. Joyce is very influential for the Latin American novel. You could say that Joyce invents a magical realism in Ireland, and that then gets reinvented in another way again by Borges, Mario Vargas Llosa and Marquez. Equally, Indian authors, Salman Rushdie, and all of the contemporary Indian authors that we currently read are actually following in the footsteps of Joyce.
Now, there's a very interesting article by Judge Adrian Hardiman on suspecting, proving, knowing three cases of unnatural death in Joyce's Ulysses. And he presents a very interesting case, so to speak, on Joyce, on what a ripe legal mind he had and how enthusiastic he was about the law.
Yes, Joyce was interested in many different areas and certainly in legal cases, in some ways in a kind of populist way, and he certainly gravitated towards cases that grabbed people's attention, infamous cases that would have been reported on very widely in the press. Joyce is interested in these cases because of the intimate detail, but also because of a certain uncertainty. Mm. He's fascinated by legal evidence, but he particularly seems to follow up on cases where things hang in the balance, where there is an uncertainty and where even if there is a legal judgment at the end of the day, you're never sure whether this judgment was warranted or not.
How big a music fan was Joyce?
Music was essential to Joyce. It was, in fact, an alternative career. And Nora famously is supposed to have said towards the end of Joyce's life that he should have stuck to the singing. But in effect, he did stick to the singing. Harry White, in his brilliant essay in this collection, looks at Joyce's interest in music and shows that it's not just that Joyce is a fan of music and interested in performance, but that somehow music and language come together for him. And so through his stylistic experiments in the different novels and fictions that he writes, Joyce is ultimately producing new musical modes, and perhaps going too far for some people in terms of Finnegan's Wake, in that Finnegan's Wake comes very close then to Schoenberg, to modernist music and dissonance, a kind of music that isn't lyrical anymore, or at least doesn't follow the standards of classical music.
Joe, are urban geographers engaging with literature, or are you just peculiar to your profession?
Well, there were many who would say perhaps I'm peculiar anyway, but the question about the business of literature giving you an insight into life, I think, is very important, because what you're looking at in an author is this ability to see further, this ability to have that inner eye which allows them to reflect on the realities that they experience. And when they communicate that in terms of a city or a place, it really gives you an insight which you can't otherwise get, because they see things and Joyce sees things. And come back to an earlier point, it's the juxtapositions and the small details which allow you suddenly to get a vision of what the place was like. So, for example, Bloom walking down Grafton Street, and he turns and his eye just catches the window display in Brown Thomas. And in a sentence and a half, you have a picture of the fine emporium that this was. For example, how else do you get a picture of the shop display of a store in downtown Dublin in 1904? So it's because of this that people will tend to go to the good literary sources and try and get that sense of what the place was like.
Would you describe yourself as a literary detective then?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, really. I mean, what I would say is that all the time you're looking for sources, and all the time you're trying to get back into the mind of somebody who was in a different place at a different time. And you've got the dry sources. You know, you've got the newspapers, you've got the advertising and so on, but you're really looking for somebody who can actually build a picture for you. So in a less classical way, I suppose, in a less useful way, you find modern novelists, you know, historical novelists and so on, try to give you an impression of the place. But nobody's done it, I think, as well as Joyce, because his famous attention to detail and his pernicketiness in trying to get, you know, down to the last iota of detail means that it's really fantastic.
And do you think we'll ever get a real handle on Joyce? Because reading A Portrait of an Artist 20, 25 years ago, reading it today, I look and feel differently about the book. And I have other areas in my life that have made me look at the book a lot differently. Do you think we will ever really come to grips with what he was doing?
We can always come to grips in some ways, but I think we don't ever really get to the bottom of Joyce. Mm-hmm. Richard Ellman famously declared in the opening to his biography on Joyce that we're still learning to be Joyce's contemporaries. So he's always ahead of us, and he's run past us into a kind of future that he has imagined. And in fact, when carries Joyce with us in order to think about the kinds of futures and presents that we are creating. So Joyce is never just a static thing in the past, and his texts are radical. They challenge us and they keep changing.
But isn't that the essence of great literature? I mean, the whole business of great literature is that it speaks to each generation in a different way, and it speaks to people at different times in their lives. So I would echo that. When I go back to Dubliners and read the stories, as your own life experience evolves, you can get this sense of how this thing means, how this story means something. Reading Dubliners as a student, much of what was being said sort of went over my head, and sort of you understood it in a sort of an intellectual way, but you didn't understand it in an emotional way.
Yeah.
And then as you get older and these experiences become more your experiences, that's why it works. That's why you can still take it down off the shelf and read it. I mean, you can sit down and read Dubliners as a series of short stories. You can read The Portrait of the Artist as literally The Portrait of the Artist and enjoy it. And then you can read Ulysses. I mean, Ulysses is a great read. People talk about how difficult Ulysses is to get into. People put barriers up, and you can enjoy the stories. Some of it you will say, hang on, that's a little bit hard to get into. And then depending on how much effort you want to do, you can dig deeper and deeper and deeper. Back to our question of layers again. Finnegan's Wake is perhaps much more difficult, but in terms of other work, it is accessible, and people are often put off by it.
Why do you think that so many people pretend to have read either Finnegan's Wake are Ulysses, and yet they'll happily read The Dead 10 times over, but that they kind of secretly have it parked in some way. Why do you think that is?
I think it's the length and the challenge of those texts. But of course, one can read them partially, as Joe has just said. Joyce actually serialised these texts to begin with, so they were intended to be read in little instalments. He was fascinated by the word and tended to spend a full day perfecting a sentence, for instance, as he famously described his methods of composition. So you don't have to take all of the text on board, nor do you have to understand all of the levels in one go.
And he was quite a sports fan as well.
Yes, surprisingly. People know about Beckett's interest in sport. Joyce and sport seems to be a more difficult topic in some ways. Certainly, he's a great walker, as one might presume from reading Ulysses anyway. But he was interested in all of the other sports that were popular in Dublin in 1904, if one's thinking about the year in which Ulysses is set. And he seems particularly to have been invested in those sports that everybody liked, like horse racing.
Now, can I ask you about your own article? You have looked at Parnell through Joyce's writing and what Joyce thinks and feels about Parnell. And it's rather conflictual, ambiguous in some aspects, and it moves between some of the different books, how he presents them as either tragic figure, as a hero.
Yes, we tend to think about Joyce as a 20th century writer, but of course Joyce was born in the 19th century, and the supreme political figure on the Irish scene towards the end of the 19th century, after you get past Daniel O'Connell, is of course Charles Stewart Parnell. And Parnell's career, as many people will know, tragically falls apart in his final years because of the divorce case, which splits the Irish Parliamentary Party in 1890. Joyce is born in 1882, so he grows up with the myth of Parnell, a dominant Parnell in Ireland. His father was a Parnellite. He's fascinated, like everyone is, with the myth of Parnell. There are Hollywood movies about Parnell, for instance. Of course, the tragedy of the secret liaison that then becomes the scandal of a divorce, and then Parnell dying as a very young man shortly afterwards, losing many of his followers who become super Catholic under the influence of the Catholic Church in Ireland. So Parnell, who had once been a hero for many people, who looked like he was going to solve the problem of Ireland politically, suddenly becomes this huge failure. And it's a kind of myth that fascinates Joyce thereafter. Joyce thinks about the father figure, this flawed father figure in which Irish people seem to be very much invested. But it's always necessarily a father figure who falls apart, who fails.
Now, Joe, I'm going to leave the dirty question for you to last.
Oh, thank you.
There's going to be a lot of people listening in here today, and they're going to say, not another Joyce book. Jesus Christ, can they not just shut up about Joyce? Why should we read this collection of essays, and why does it matter?
I think you said it earlier on, that this is a collection of essays where people come at it from a whole series of perspectives. These are not all Joycean scholars. These are people who have seen the value of Joyce or the interest of Joyce from their own particular disciplinary perspective. And they've seen that there is great interest and great value in it. And when you bring these people together, you get all kinds of different insights and different angles. And I think that's why it really works.
This book intends really to mix Joyce up in a different way. We've called it Voices on Joyce. It also includes many images of Joyce by the American photographer Lee Miller, who came to Dublin in 1946 and put together a fascinating array of images, which are partly images through the lens of Joyce, but it's also a different evolving city that we see there. So what we wanted to convey in this collection is the variety of Joyce, the fact there's no consensus amongst informed readers of Joyce at all, and there's friction amongst the findings of this different essays, that you have to keep shifting perspective. You look at, with Frank McGinnis, you look at Ibsen, for instance, with Fritz Zehn, you look at Ovid, not Homer, unusually, and with Geraldine Meany, you look at Roddy Doyle and Angela Carter, Dara O'Connell, you look at philosophy like Vico, with Joseph Long, you look at Dante and Homer and Beckett. And we need all of these varied perspectives in order to think about Joyce. No one perspective will give you everything that you need to know.
The whole business about Joyce is that he constantly astonishes you one way or another. And you go and you see Joyce in one context, and then you see it in a different... Frank McGinnis's adaptation of The Dead recently was a fascinating view of Joyce, quite different in many respects to the one that we all will go to now. And yet it was a tiny little point which suddenly, as I was listening to it, I said, that's something odd. Now, it's a little point, but it appealed to me as a geographer. Gabriel goes to the Gresham. Why go to the Gresham? The Gresham is not on his way home. He should have gone to the Shelburne. No, there's something there which I want to find out about. And that's the whole business about the fact that when you put together a series of essays like this and you get these perspectives, things will hop out, which will lead people down all kinds of different roads again. And that which was certain in one person's essay will become uncertain in another. And that's the beauty of it.